looking at Parshas Yisro and Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, right? So what I titled here, Emunah Now and Then, is because I want to look at what this mitzvah is, if it's a mitzvah at all. What is this first of the Aseres Hadibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha? What does it mean? Is it a command? And how does it speak to the Jews who are standing at Sinai at that point versus how it speaks to the reader today? Because there's a real substantive difference, as we'll see. If you take a look on the sheet at source number one, please. This is the first pasuk / two psukim of the Aseres Hadibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mibeis Avadim. I am Hashem your God who took you out of the land of Egypt, the house of slaves. Lo yelecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai. You shall have either no other gods, or you shall not have the gods of others before me. Rashi notes on the Shivan Aziyash here that you can't say other gods because there aren't any. So it means the gods of others. However you read it, it's clear. No idols. That's what we're saying. Nothing outside of Hashem. The reason I say that this is either one pasuk or two psukim, even though you see there's only one colon at the end, is because it depends on how you lean it. Meaning, if you were to look at it in terms of the way we break down the Aseres Hadibros, right, the way we think of them, we count them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you would look at the notes as they appear in a Chumash, you would say, Avadim is the end of a Pasuk. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Beis Avadim, period. Lo yelecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai. However, the way that we do the Torah reading with what's called the Tam Elyon, the special drop, the special notes that are used in many, maybe most shuls, it actually is read as one Pasuk. The it reads straight through. So either way, I am Hashem your God who took you out of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. That's our introduction. And the Gemara seems to assume that this is a mitzvah of some kind. If you take a look at source number two, it actually thinks it's two mitzvahs. This is a classic Gemara. I think we've even mentioned it at some point in the past. It is the source for the idea that there are 613 mitzvahs. How do we get 613? It's not by counting up the mitzvahs in the Chumash. That's just not true. And what happens is Rabbi Simlai in the Gemara here at the end of Makos in number 2 tells us there are 613. And then, starting in the period of the Gaonim, you find attempts to calculate and figure out how you can get the mitzvahs to 613. Because the truth of the matter is there are many, many more. So the question is only, what am I going to omit? How am I going to condense? So some of them are easy, like all 39 malachos are one mitzvah, don't do malacha. Right? That's easy. But what about all the different kinds of karbanos? If you did this, then you bring that. If you did this, then you bring that. Is that one mitzvah of bringing karbanos? Is there one mitzvah of bringing a karban to atone, and there are just different kinds of karbanos? Or is each karban its own mitzvah? What about if a mitzvah is repeated multiple times in the Torah? What if a mitzvah has many parts to its fulfillment? Right? Basic, tefillin. Arm tefillin, head tefillin. One mitzvah or two mitzvahs? Questions like that. So the Rambam is most famous for coming up with a whole bunch of rules in the beginning of a Sefer HaMitzvos for which things count and which things don't count, and then Ramban is famous for disagreeing with him. And so on and so forth. It goes on and on. Rav Sadia Gaon writes poetry that lists the 613 mitzvahs, because that's what you did if you were Rav Sadia Gaon. But take a look at source number 2, which is the source that starts it all. Darash Rabbi Simloi. Rabbi Simloi taught, Sheish Meos Mushlosh Esrei Mitzvahs Namru Lo Lamoshe. Moshe was given 613 mitzvahs. And Amar Rav Nuni, he gives you, in the part that I skipped there, they give you the symbolism of 613. There are 248 of one kind of mitzvah, 365 of the other kind of mitzvah, 248 the Evarim in the body, 365 the days of the year, solar year anyway. But after that, Amar Rav Nuni, Mikra. Rav Nuni says, what's the pasuk? Where's your basis for saying there are 613? Torah tziva lanu Moshe mo rasha, right? Mo rasha kilas Yaakov, of course. What does that have to do with anything? So Torah is commanded to us by Moshe. Torah in gematria is shis mea v'chad sari, is 611. Right? You can do the math; it's been done before. It really is 611. So Moshe gave us 611. Anochi and Loyia mipi agvur shamanum. We heard of them from Hashem. So 611 were from Moshe, two from Hashem. Why do you make that distinction? These are from God? Because if you read the Aseres Hadibros, you realize that he switches from first person, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelocha Lohim Acherim Al Panai, to, once you get to the third of the Dibros, Lo Sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. Don't take the name of Hashem, your God. It's no longer God speaking, now it's Moshe speaking. So he picks up on that and says, okay, 611 mitzvot are given to us by Moshe, two are given to us by Hashem. That leads to 613. We're going to have to come back to that because it's not so clear cut. But what it establishes right now is that each of these first two dibrot is a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah of I am Hashem your God, and there is a mitzvah of you shall have no other gods before me. So one last source, and then we're going to have to discuss this, is source number three. The Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvos. The very first mitzvah that he brings. HaMitzvah HaRishona. The first mitzvah, he had Tzivui Asher Tzivanu LaHa'amin HaElokut, is that we are commanded, God commanded us to believe in divinity. We have to believe that there is a catalyst and cause. I don't have like a distinction in mind between catalyst and cause, but the Rambam uses these two different words, so that's why I'm using them. The ilah and siba, but the both of them are the same point for our purposes. The Rambam, I assure you, had a distinction. The Rambam was very careful about terms like this, and in his Mora Nebuchim, he spends the entire first volume of Mora Nebuchim defining terms like this. But if you're not, you know, a philosopher, ilah and siba are both causes. So there is a being who is a cause, who is po'el l'chol hanimtzaot, who creates all that exists. V'hu amro yizbarach, and that's what the pasuk means when it says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, and then he goes on to quote the Gemara that we just had in source number 2. So the Rambam says, the first mitzvah in the Torah, a product of I am Hashem your God, is to believe that there is a God, which he defines as catalyst and cause for everything that exists. Clear? Not to me.
That's
a really important point before we get to the other questions that are being raised here. The question is not, do you accept this? The question is, do you understand what you're being told to accept? In other words, he's not having a debate right now. The Rambam will, in his writing, discuss the idea that maybe something else can cause. That's not the point here. He's saying that there's a command from the Torah to believe that there is a God who created everything and who is the cause for all that exists. That's what he's suggesting. Naomi, what were you going to...
No, that's not... Isn't that the essential of all of Judaism? Maybe I misunderstood what's written here, but like, if you don't believe in God, then what is really everything else? Because isn't everything else to basically enhance, like, practice Judaism, which is centered around believing in God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the catalyst and the cause of everything that came out is God given.
So it's certainly an underpinning. There are other elements of Judaism which get identified as the thing around which everything else revolves. Whatever, you know, there are other items that become very central to Judaism, but in terms of the authority that makes Judaism.
But isn't all that
anything,
morality from. That's the morality
right.
That God wanted.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So I feel like it is all.
Okay.
But if somebody doesn't believe,
what's your question?
My question right now is, what here is problematic? My question here is simply, what is difficult here? What is problematic here?
That's, how do you command someone to believe?
Right.
So, accurate,
right. First of all, what are you commanding? What does that even mean? How can belief be obligatory? Either you believe it, check, right? Or you don't believe it, in which case you're not going to follow a commandment which says believe it. right?
I remember learning at one point the same with like the Ahavtas, like love Hashem, saying that like doing those actions which lead you to love. So this command is doing the actions which lead you to believe.
Right. So one way to look at it is to say, and we're going to come back to sources that do say this, that it means take the steps which will lead to belief. That's an approach. It doesn't sound like what the Rambam thinks. The Rambam is very clear, right? He says the mitzvah is leha'amin ha'elokut, to believe. Not to try to believe. Not to, you know, examine and contemplate. No, to believe. That seems to be what he's saying. Because either you believe it, or you don't. And if you don't believe it, then you're not going to accept a commandment that says believe it.
You're talking to Zohar Midbar. Of course they're going to believe.
Right. So that's part of where we have to go with this, is the question of who is the audience for this mitzvah. We're going to come back to that. It's an excellent point. What other things are difficult here? His definition of belief in God is a little narrow. Right? Can you call it Judaism if somebody simply believes that, you know, as the Rambam put it here, that there is a God who caused everything? Like, that's already sufficient? You can call that belief in God?
Maybe that's the commandment. It's not necessarily that he has hashgacha on the world, but that he created the world.
So I don't need to believe? I mean, that wouldn't look like Judaism as the Rambam himself believes in it. Right? The Rambam gives us his 13 principles. How many of his principles find their way into this? Not too many of them. Right? According to this, I mean, there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. He's not done. And we'll see that. But right now, it's a fairly narrow definition of belief that seems to be expected here. He doesn't say anything about God observing what goes on in the world. He doesn't say anything about reward and punishment. He doesn't say anything about God being all-knowing. He doesn't say anything about God being eternal. Right? None of that is here. It's a very narrow definition of what belief is. We have more sheets here.
Is this the entirety of what
no.
he said?
Nope, he's got more, but not on... this is the entirety of what he has to say on this mitzvah, on this pasuk. Meaning the rest of his section here is just the Gemara and Makos and a summary sentence. That's it. We need to do some work here in order to understand what exactly this mitzvah is. And there are more problems that we're going to have to go through. In number four, I just gave you links to three things that I found very, very interesting. I did not agree with everything I saw, so this is not meant to be an endorsement. But the first one, Rabbi Yosef Bednarsh, is a good analysis of the Rambam on the First Commandment. And then Rabbi Donnie Stein has an article in Tradition. This one in particular, I wasn't on board with some of the things that he did with it, but I thought he brought some very interesting sources on the issue of bitachon, which we're going to have to talk about as well, which is distinct from emunah, we think. And then an audio shiur, Rabbi Nathanael Wiederblank, on whether emunah requires certainty, which is a big part of our conversation on this. How sure do you have to be in order to qualify as a ma'amin? Does it have to be like you 100% know this to be true? What if a person has, you know, questions? What if a person has doubts and they have never been resolved? So does that person not qualify, according to the Rambam, as somebody who is fulfilling this mitzvah?
How can you be 100%? It's hard to be 100%.
Okay, but what's the standard? Maybe that's the standard. I don't know. Right now, all I have is a very stark wording from the Rambam, which I suppose on the one hand is minimalist and on the other hand is maximalist. Right? On the one hand, he's minimalist. All he included in belief in God is belief that there is a God who caused everything. And then on the other hand, he's maximalist. You have to believe it. And we're going to see later on, he's going to use the word not only to believe it, but to know it. I don't even know what that means.
Do some people take this to mean like you are obligated to really understand how that Hashem created the world? Because I feel like most of us just grow up, Hashem created the world, we don't learn about evolution and proving all this sort of thing. Are we obligated to do that?
So that's going to be part of the discussion as well.
You mean like fight from like a scientific... Yeah, like really understand, because you had to prove to me Hashem created the world and it wasn't a big thing. Could you do that? I believe it. I do, but could this the responsibility to be able to prove it?
No, right.
Okay. What is a believer?
So let's see what we can do with this. We have to begin with a basic debate. That's all right. This is going to be a two-parter. You know that. But the starting point has to be a basic debate as to whether Anochi is a mitzvah at all. Clearly the Rambam thinks it's a mitzvah. Ramban agrees with him. Surprise. Source number 5, after a discussion of this, his comment you see here in number 5 is on Lo Ta'aseh number 5. Lo Ta'aseh number 5 is actually the prohibition against having other gods. Lo Yelcha Elohim Achirim. Why is number 5 on the list of prohibitions is its own discussion. The Rambam system of counting, how he assigns numbers to mitzvot, is extremely opaque. I have not seen an adequate explanation for how the Rambam numbered his mitzvot. It's not the order they appear in the Torah, not by any stretch of the imagination. So he says, "V'atov be'einai b'zeh ha'inyan kulo." He says, "You know what I think is right about this? This meaning the Anochi debate, is it a mitzvah? Is it not a mitzvah? Shenimne Anochi Hashem Elokecha mitzvah k'ma'amar harav." He says, "I agree with the Rambam. It's a mitzvah. V'yeshli raya b'zeh midibrei chachamim," and he says, "I'll prove it to you from a medrash in the Mechilta. Mechilta we've talked about before is halachic medrash on Sefer Shmos." The Medrash asks, why is it that the Aseres HaDibros aren't at the start of the Torah? Why not start in Anochi Hashem Elokecha? Mashlu mashalamad davar dome. Well, they compared it, the sages compared it to the following. La'echad shenichnas l'medina, someone comes into some land, amar lamem lo chalechem, and he says to the population, shall I rule over you? Why? What have you done? Why should we make you a leader? Ma'asa, so what did he do? Banalahem choma. He built them a wall for defense. Hichnis lehem amat hamayim. He introduced irrigation. And it goes on with all these other things that the person does. And then, amar lehem lo chalechem. And he says, shall I rule over you? Amar lo, hein vehein. And they said, absolutely, you bet. And then the Medrash goes on to talk about all the things that Hashem did before bringing us to Sinai, and then saying, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So Hashem needs to establish credibility, so to speak, and then says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Bekabalas Hamalchus Hazu Shekiblu B'Sinai Hu Be'emes Midibur Anochi. The acceptance of Hashem's reign at Sinai comes from this statement of Anochi. So the way that the Ramban reads it, based on this Mechilta, is our acceptance of Hashem as God comes through Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and therefore Anochi Hashem Elokecha must be the command for us to finally accept that. We weren't ready to accept it earlier. Now it's time for you to say, yes, I believe in Hashem, and I accept Hashem as Melech.
But that's yeah. Problematic, because yeah. It's like, you have to believe in Hashem because look at all these things that Hashem has done for you, and then you're in another era where you don't see all those things as clearly.
We're getting there. Not there yet, but we're getting there.
Question. We're debating whether Anochi is a mitzvah. So,
yes.
But isn't anything Masar as a difference? A mitzvah came a few minutes late, so maybe it's
no, I mean, why should it be? We didn't discuss it before you came. Why should it be?
I've always, I don't know.
The Ten Commandments.
Yeah, but it's not. In other words,
it might be part of our religion, but not a mitzvah?
Meaning, Hashem can speak to human beings without it being a commandment. In other words, I'll make it easier. Take a look at source number 6.
Right.
The Baal Halach, no. The Baal Halachas Gedolos, long before there was a Rambam, 8th century, one of the Gaonim, looked at Anochi Hashem Elokecha and said, that's not a mitzvah. The Baal Halachos Gedolos is actually the earliest existing work of halacha. Rabbi Yehudai Gaon, I believe, is the author. And it doesn't exist, I think. I don't believe we have a full manuscript. We have pieces of it. But it's the earliest that we have, because before that, what you find in the Gemara is all sorts of debates of halacha, but you don't find a text that's actually, this is halacha. It's the discussions that lead us to halacha conclusions. Baal Halachos Gedolos is the earliest one, I believe, that we have. So he, Baal Halachos Gedolos, objects to the idea that this is a mitzvah. He says, first of all, we saw number 2, the Gemara in Makos, about the 613, right, 611 plus 2, doesn't work, because the second of these commandments, so to speak, includes multiple mitzvos. Lo yelecha Elohim achirim panah, you shall have no gods of others, right? But it also includes not to make idols. Right? Lo sa'aseh lo chafesa b'chol tmuna shebashayim ma b'shares mitachas. Lo sishtachave lohem. You shall not bow to them. Lo sa'avdeim. You shall not serve them. These are all isurim. These are all separate prohibitions. So, if you're trying to tell me that you had 611 plus the first two dibros, and those bring you to 613, you should be somewhere on 616. Because you have like five mitzvahs there.
If you just said that the entire month of Kislev is counting as one.
So right, so the problem is that all those, like not to bow to them and not to make them and all that, are counted as separate mitzvahs. All of the counters of the 613 enumerate them separately because they really are separate things. Meaning a person who makes an idol has broken the law, even if they didn't bow to it. A person who bows to an idol has broken the law, even though they didn't make an idol. These are really separate isurim. They deserve to stand alone. The math doesn't work. So Ramban deals with that, and Ramban says, I'm not really troubled by that, because the answer is that the mitzvahs that we count in the second of the Aseres HaDibros actually can be found in other psukim also. They're not based on this one of the Dibros. He's not concerned about that problem. That doesn't bother Ramban. But the second point that the Bahag makes is the one that gives everybody trouble. Take a look at source number 6. The Bahag quotes a Medrash, also from the Mechilta. Mashal lemelech basar v'dam shenichnas lemedina. You have a human king who enters a land. Amrulo Avadav. His servants say to him, Gezor alayim gezeros. Take control. Issue decrees. Tell them what to do. Amrulahem lav. And he says to the servants, no. Kishekavulas malchusi gezor alayim gezeros. When they accept my reign, then I'll issue decrees. Shemalchusi malchusi lo yikavlu, because if they don't accept me as king, gezeros I lo yikavlu, they're not going to accept my decrees. I have to go in order. First they have to accept me, then I can actually give instructions. Kaf Amar Hamakom liYisrael. This is what Hashem said to us. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem your God. Lo yelocha lohim acherim. You shall not have the gods of others. Amar Lehem. He said to them, Ani hu shekibaltem malchusi aleichem b'mitzrayim. I am the one whose reign you accepted already in Egypt. Amar Lochein. They said yes. And just like you accepted me as king, accept my decree, lo yelocha lohim acherim, dot, dot, dot. In other words, the way that this medrash is worded, remember this halachic medrash, is that anochi is an introduction. It's, remember me? I'm the one who took you out of Egypt? Here are my rules. Lo yelocha lohim acherim alpanai, lo sisa, shabbos, kibud av v'aim, lo sirtzach, and so on. But it's really just a preface. It's not a mitzvah, according to the Bahag. How do we end up with 10 commandments then? Doesn't the Torah say, Aseres HaDevarim? Yeah, we'll figure it out. You can do that. You can break up the psukim differently in order to arrive at 10. That's not a big deal. But that's the position of the Bahag. And remember, the Bahag, coming along as he does a couple of hundred years before the Rambam, is a voice that matters a great deal. It's not like you can just say, okay, so there's always someone who disagrees. It means that you have a real debate. I think the answer is that they're both right. And this goes back to a point that's been made already here regarding the different audiences. Meaning, that generation, the initial generation that's hearing this at Sinai, needs an introduction. They need an introduction to God. Because some of them know something about God and our history, right? Because otherwise, when Moshe comes to them and says, "Ve'elokim pakod yifkod eschem," God is going to take you out, like Yosef said, what God, whatever, they clearly have to know something. They have to know that there is a history, they have to know there's a God that we believe in, and whose words are going to be meaningful. They receive mitzvos in Egypt, right? Even if they seem to be based on Yetzias Mitzrayim, they receive some commandments, right? You bring the Karban Pesach. They have some sense of God. At the same time, they're clearly unsophisticated. When Moshe talks to Hashem at the Sneh, and he says, they're going to ask me what his name is, what should I tell them? Right? Which the Midrashim understand as Moshe saying, how should I describe you to them? And Hashem says, well, tell them, yeah, I will be, and I will be with them in the future, and so on. the fact that they need that kind of thing, the fact that Moshe understands that they need that kind of thing, says there is a lack of sophistication, whether that's all Jews, non-Shevet Levi, whatever it is, there are Jews who don't really know Hashem. So much so that you look at the descriptions found like in Yechezkel of the Jews in Mitzrayim, and you find that there were Jews who were worshipping Avodah Zarah. They were worshipping idols. Yes, you know the Medrash that says they didn't change their names, their language, their dress. That may be true for some of them, but others absolutely did. Others were immersed in Egypt. So I think the Bahag's argument makes a lot of sense for that generation. There's a need for Hashem to say, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt, for an audience that doesn't necessarily recognize it, as opposed to future generations who read this, for whom an introduction isn't necessary, because I read everything from Bereishis until Yisro. I don't need it as an intro. Why is it there in the Chumash? Because it's also supposed to speak to future generations as a command. That's the way that I would look at it. Chayla.
I'm back. I'm still stuck on the back of the stairs. So there aren't mitzvahs. Are all of them written again elsewhere?
No, they. Let me make sure I'm being clear. Everyone will agree that for starting Lo Yiyeh and running through Lo Sach mode, these are commands, and therefore they are mitzvahs, and they will come up in the 613 and so forth. The debate is only whether Anochi counts as a mitzvah. Yeah, sorry. We have to be really, really clear about that. I don't want anyone coming out thinking that, like, Los Angeles isn't the mitzvah. That would be bad.
If you're saying that Anochi might not be a mitzvah, what are you counting as that 10th commandment then?
So, the easiest thing to do is to break up Lo Yiyeh into not having other gods and not making idols.
Yeah. Why would you want to do that? That's what I don't understand. Like, I feel like if you're reading it, it's part of the 10. Like, it's...
Because it's not worded that way. All the other ones are worded as do this or don't do this. Most of them are don't do this. This one just says, I am Hashem your God who took you out of Egypt. It looks like it's a handshake. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It really doesn't sound like a mitzvah. If you would, you know, if I were, one of my kids said this to me last week, the week before, that they really wish that they had read the Akedah for the first time without knowing the ending, like without knowing the story, you know, and it's true because like we know the story first, and the same thing is true here. If I were to read Parashat Yisro without ever knowing there's a thing called Ten Commandments, I would have assumed that Anochi is a preface. I wouldn't have assumed that it was a mitzvah. I would have followed what Bahag says. It makes perfect sense. For the Jews of that time, this is Hashem saying, "Let me introduce myself." However, for us, we don't need Hashem to introduce himself. He's already done that. And therefore, for us, it makes sense to say, as Ramban says, this is meant to be taken as a mitzvah in its own right. That would be the way that would
work. For us, would it make more sense to say that I'm God who, you know, created the world? Who, like, is he talking to the audience there that I took out of Egypt just for that generation, like what Kyle was saying, that generation?
Right. So that's the classic Rashi.
Yeah, that's what we want.
Right, that's the classic Rashi. He asks the question of why you picked getting out of Egypt instead of picking creation. And the answer is, because what have you done for me lately? Right? You're going to talk about the fact that you created the world. What does that have to do with me? Besides the fact that I have oxygen to breathe. It's he took us out of Egypt just now. You know,
but for future, right.
Yeah.
Do you think Rambam could be talking about like always that leap of like you do everything you have to, but at the end of the day, you just have to believe because
so we'll get there.
That's why it's a command because you can't prove it. Specifically for that reason.
We'll get to that. Really. The next section here, the next piece of this that we have to go through to understand it, is the question of how belief could be a mitzvah. How can believing in God really be presented as a mitzvah? Rav Chasdai Kreshkish is probably not a name, bless you, that you're that familiar with. He was, I think he's 14th century, maybe 15th, lived in Italy, if I remember correctly, and he wrote a work called Or Hashem, as in Light of God, and I didn't retype everything and translate it here for you. I just brought you two bullet points from his objections here. Rav Kreshkish is most famous for his work on extraterrestrial life. In Or HaShem, he discusses the question of whether the Torah believes in aliens. His answer is maybe. He goes through a whole bunch of reasons why yes, and then he shows that none of them really require it. He goes through a whole bunch of reasons why not, and then he undermines those, and he says, I guess it could be. And that's more or less why he leaves it. An example of an argument for yes is, since we believe that Hashem creates us because Hashem is good and he wants there to be, not wants it by definition, there must be beneficiaries of divine goodness. So it makes sense for there to be more beneficiaries of divine goodness. Why should it just stop here? Why wouldn't God create more life? Why just here? And then an example of an argument against is, well, if the goal is that there should be a nation that accepts Hashem's Torah, Hashem's commands, so that's sufficient already to just have one. You don't need to have more than one. It's all very philosophical. And a couple of sort of pseudoscientific, like, well, if they're there, why don't we see them type stuff. But he ends up defeating all his different arguments and saying, well, could be. He won't be surprised. But here he talks about this idea of belief in God as a mitzvah, and he has two primary objections that we are concerned with. He has more, but I brought two for our discussion. Number one is what we said before, which is it's circular. If you believe in God, you have already fulfilled the mitzvah, and if you don't believe in God, then you're going to look at it and say, why should I do this? You're not going to believe it because it's a mitzvah. That's number one. And number two, he says, belief is not something you can choose to do. Either you believe or you don't believe. Mitzvos, especially within the thinking of the Rambam, are a function of free will. What's the free will? Either someone shows you evidence, and therefore you believe it. You don't choose to believe in gravity. Right? You drop the ball, it hits the ground. Okay, I guess there's a thing called gravity. It's not a decision I made, it's just obvious. Someone says to you that there are dragons flying through the air in the room. You look around, you say, I don't see any dragons. I don't believe that there are dragons. It's not because you chose to. It just is. It's not like maket, right? You have a surface and there's a drop-off of 10 tefachim. You have to make a wall to keep people from falling off of the of it. So you make a decision. I am going to, build a protecting maket, right? You're blessed with parents and there's a mitzvah kibud av aim, so you're going to go do X in order to honor your parents. That's a decision you make. You don't decide to believe. Either you do or you don't, based on proof.
But can't you have, can't that be the commandment? Is you have a commandment to figure out and educate yourself and learn to believe
God? Right. So that was where Chayil, I think, was trying to go before, much before, I think. It was someone in that corner, I think it was you. But that's where Abarbanel goes. If you take a look at source number 8, Abarbanel wrote a work called Rosh Amanah. Amana, related to the word emunah, he's play on words, but it's Tashuv Merosh Amana is the pasuk that he's basing it on from Shir HaShirim. So he writes, "E'efshar she'agiyu ha'emunos ha'hem im lo yikadmu aleihem ha'hachana ha'kodemet." He says, you can't get to those beliefs. When he says those beliefs, he means the ones that are required of us. He says, you can't get there unless you do the backup steps first. Midias hadvarim ha'meviyim elo samu emunos. You have to know things that lead to those beliefs. Ve'en safik she'achanos ha'hem he'em mipal ha'ratzon v'ha'bechira. But he says, the preparation you make, the learning that you do that brings you to believe, is a function of free will. You have to decide to learn it. V'shiyu niknos bizman. They are acquired over time. Ki la'adam she'yirtzeh lishmoa v'lamodu l'amei v'ladas osam hadvarim she'chayvu v'yolidu ha'amuna b'nafsho. He says somebody wants to learn all those things that are going to cause him to believe. Olo yirtzeh lisaseik bazeh. Or decides he doesn't want to do it. But, he's got to make that decision. V'ine harav lo mana mitzvas asei tzuras ha'emuna v'amitasa. He says, the Rambam isn't telling you that the mitzvah is the form of belief. That's what you believe. Ki im yidias hadvarim ha'hem v'limudam ha'mevi'im el kinyan ha'munot. He says, it's knowing the things that will bring you to believe. That's the mitzvah. That's Abarbanel's take. is the that the idea is you have to prepare for belief. That's your mitzvah. Rabbi Bednarsh, in the article that I linked earlier, offers an idea which I think is similar to what he's saying. And he points to an idea from the Malbim. The Malbim, in his commentary to the Aseres HaDibros, notes something interesting in the Rambam's language. Source number 9 is the Rambam that the Malbim is talking about. Yesod HaYesodos. This is the beginning of Yesodei HaTorah, the foundations of the Torah. The beginning of the Rambam, of the Rambam's work, which is going to lay out for us the fundamentals of Torah and universe. So he says, Yesod HaYesodos V'omud HaChochmos. The foundation of foundations and pillar of wisdoms. Leida SheYesham Matsui Rishon. Is to know that there is a first. V'hu mamtzi kol nimsa, the one who caused all that is found. V'chol hanimtzaim mishamayim v'aretz u'masha b'neihem, everything found, heaven and earth and in between. Lo nimtzu ela me'amitas himatzo. It's only there because of the truth of the one who made it found. Parenthetically, do you notice the acronym? He's starting his major work here. The beginning, the first four words. Exactly. That's intentional. That's absolutely intentional. Yesod v'amud hachochmos. That's how he starts. The point for us is the word leida, to know. What we pursue is clear knowledge. So Rabbi Bednarsh argues that this may be a second answer to Rav Chasdai Kreshkesh, which is, you can have a basic faith that just enables you to, so to speak, get by. Right? Sort of like what you said before. Right? You can have a person grows up and they go to day school and they're in a frum home and they know, we believe in God. If pressed, they couldn't tell you why. They couldn't tell you what it's about, and they couldn't even tell you why they believe it. Because this is who I am and this is what I do, type of a thing, and they'll survive in life. But he says, that's not what the Rambam is after. The Rambam is after leida, to know. And in order to truly know something, you have to have a grasp of it. You have to have its underpinnings. You have to have the logic. All of that is required for part of it. It is insufficient, according to this read of the Rambam, which is, again, through the Malbim and his emphasis on the word leida. There's a need to get beyond the basic getting by type of emunah to actually have a level of comprehension that that transcends basic acceptance. Fascinatingly,
does the Rambam outline how, like, what the logical steps are to get there?
Yeah.
This almost sounds like Avram.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Like seeking out, finding. It just sounds like what Abraham, like his mission and what his goal was.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you read it, it doesn't mention anything about really Hashem. It's more of the individual.
I hear you.
It just sounds interesting.
Right. And in terms of the question that Hadassah asked about, does he lay out how to do it? So the Rambam talks about viewing the universe as a means of getting to recognition of Hashem and Avas Hashem, and that's very important to him, but he's also very into philosophy. Now, one of the problems with reading the Rambam 850 to 900 years after he passed away is that a lot of his philosophy is no longer relevant, meaning he spends a lot of his time defeating Greek ideas that no one would give the time of day to anyway anymore. So, for example, one of the big ones in the Rambam's day is the Greek belief that the world has always been here. It was never created, it simply always existed. And the Rambam devotes a lot of time and effort to showing that that's not so, because if it always existed, then there's no creator, and there's no end, because one of the Greek ideas is that that which is has always been, therefore will always be. But today, no one seriously entertains the idea that matter has always been here. No one in the realm of science and no one in the realm of religion. No one cares about that. So you need to go through and figure out which parts of it are actually germane for someone who's seeking answers today. It's a different world. There have been writers who have tried to write sort of modernized versions of Mora Nevuchim to address the questions of today. But the Rambam is a big believer in the idea of analysis as a means, looking around, perceiving, thinking through in order to get to that point. What's interesting to me in this approach is that it's counter to what is usually called emunah pshuta, where a person just says, I'm a simple person, and I believe. Rav Nachman Breslov was very big on in this idea. He felt that the farther you go in trying to do philosophical exploration, the worse off you are. He believed it's a higher level of emunah to simply say, I accept. That's a very non-Maimonidean approach. The Rambam would look at that and say, no, that's, you didn't get anywhere. But it's a different school.
It's not something I don't think they teach, and at least not the Bishop of the Yeshivas, how to like logically believe in Hashem.
It's hard. It's hard to do this in school. No,
and I understand that. Like when you're supposed to learn it, right? Not in high school.
The problem that you have.
That's the way you believe. Then what?
Right. The problem that you have is fundamentally twofold. Number one, teenagers are not mature enough for a real discussion of it, and I hate to say that very broadly and stereotypically, but it's certainly my experience. As someone who, until recently was a teenager. But second, the term in Hebrew is nogeya b'davar, right? Conflict of interest. Meaning, teenagers are not going to approach a discussion like this with a level playing field. There are too many things they want to be able to do that if I have to accept belief in God, then I can't do all those other things. And therefore, the way they approach these kinds of conversations is, how can I defeat this? As opposed to, how can I learn about this? And it doesn't work. You need a level of maturity that's willing to say, all of my personal interests aside, what can I learn here? And, where are the proofs? Where are the disproofs? What can I, how can I come to a conclusion? When you're a teenager, you're just not ready to do that. I don't blame the schools for. I mean, I know schools that try. They'll have either Rebbeim will try individually to have sort of emunah-ish discussions, or they'll have classes on emunah, which will talk about some of the issues. And I respect it, but you're not going to really get where you need to go with someone who's in the world of adolescence. Okay, and but does it work to answer all the questions? It's so hard.
I don't know, kind of.
You can learn a lot.
Yeah.
You can learn a lot. The other approach to this problem that I want to present is Rav Elchanan Wasserman's approach. Rav Elchanan Wasserman comes at it from the opposite direction. In the beginning of his work, Kovetz Ma'amarim Be'igros, He comes at it from the exact opposite of Abarbanel's approach. Again, our question that we're trying to answer is, how can you command belief? Right? Our first question that we dealt with was structural. Is Anochi really a command or not? Does it make sense to understand it as a command? Our second objection is philosophical. How could you command belief? So the first approach to it, Abarbanel says, you're just commanding people to explore in order to reach belief. Our second approach was this Malbim-based approach, that the Rambam is looking for you to get beyond basic belief. He wants you to get to advanced belief. Rav Elchanan Wasserman goes in the exact opposite direction. You're familiar with the idea that the world calls intelligent design? You've heard of this?
No.
Okay. Intelligent design is put forth, generally speaking, by evangelical Christians. In the debates about evolution, they make the argument, and you know the argument without knowing the term intelligent design, they make the argument that you look around the world, you see that things function so incredibly well, and therefore you know someone must have designed it. This couldn't happen randomly. Whereas people who will support evolution as God will say, no, that's the way evolution works. Things evolve to be able to do it. And they'll say, well, what about the eye? How did the eye evolve? And they'll say, well, actually, we now have an answer for that. And back and forth and back and forth. But the school of intelligent design says you can see how the world functions and recognize in it that there has to be a designer, which may be similar to the Medrash about Abraham, right, looking in the building and seeing a light burning in the building and saying someone must have built this building, someone must have lit this lamp. So that's the school that Rav Chaim Wasserman very much believes in. He says, everyone has to believe. Look at the world around you. Of course you believe. How could you not? How could you see this world and not accept that that God created it? He says it has to be so. And he builds on that by saying, within Torah it has to be so. Because the penalties that are given in the Torah for denying belief are very harsh. Right? Someone who's a kofar b'ikar is drummed out and so on. So he says it must be achievable for everybody. Further, the mitzvah of Anochi is incumbent on every Jew from the age of 12, 13. They have an obligation to believe it. So you can't tell me, like Abarbanel says, that it requires great philosophy in order to reach that. Because everyone has this as a mitzvah. You can tell me, a kid, you know, I just spent 2 minutes talking about adolescence and how they're not going to grasp this. But it's their mitzvah too. What are they supposed to do? So Chaim Wasserman argues that belief is natural via observance of the universe. And he quotes the Chovos HaLevavos in source number 10, Rabbi Lubachia. He says, Kasher nistaka ba'olam hazeh. When we look at this world, we find that it is composed of multiple things that are joined together. Murkav, it is complex. None of its components is independent of combinations and order, meaning everything works together within this universe. There are ecosystems, there are molecules, everything is joined of multiple parts. We look around and see it as a constructed house. So there's a builder. Asher zuman bo kolat sarichla, with all of its needs prepared for it. So Rabbeinu Bachya makes the argument, and Rav Hanan builds on it, that belief is natural. And to him then, the mitzvah of belief is not go believe this. The mitzvah is don't deny that which is true. Belief is your natural state. When you look around, it's obvious. And the mitzvah is don't deny that which is true. Because people may want to deny it in order to be able to do the things that they want to do, the things that belief doesn't allow them to do. So that's he looks at it from the completely opposite direction. Abarbanel says the mitzvah is you got to work at it. Right? Malbim emphasizes that as well with the idea of the Rambam's word leida. And Rav Chaim Wasserman says no. He says the point is don't disbelieve the evidence of your own eyes. And now I go back to our original audience question. Who is the audience for this mitzvah? Abarbanel has to be speaking to us, right? You can't tell me that standing at Har Sinai, they were commanded to develop a sophisticated philosophical system. It doesn't make any sense. Hashem gives them a command, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and expects that they're going to work through all the proofs for everything. But in his mind, and certainly within the Rambam's Leida extension, via Malbim, I'm supposed to not only be aware of this, but have a whole fleshed out conception behind it of how you know this to be true, of how you can prove it to be true, how you can argue the point. The Abarbanel, I think, is speaking to this as a mitzvah ledoros for future generations. Rav Chaim Wasserman, though, I think is more like what you're saying. He's talking to the original audience. The original audience has no excuse for not believing. Whatever it is that's going to go wrong, that's going to lead to a golden calf, right? Because they believe that Hashem exists, but he abandoned them, or whatever it is, they can't not believe in a creator.
And yet, like, you would think that they wouldn't be able to not believe, but there's this added thing of, I took you out of Egypt, which, like, should not be necessary.
Well,
like, reminding them of, like, it should be enough to say, Anochi Hashem, and not, like, have this reminder of, like, because I did these good things for you. It's almost like that's like the assurance that they need. Like, remember, like, you should believe in me because, remember, just like a little while ago, I took you out of captivity.
Well, is that assurance or is it identification? Meaning, I would look at it as they're living in a polytheistic society that believes that there's more than one God, right? So God is saying, I'm that one. That's me. That's the way I look at it. That's the identification. Not so much the because of, as this is who I am.
But
or choose me as opposed to the other one.
Choose me as opposed to the other ones. I suppose. But I just like, as you say, to me, it's not a because of, it's a statement of, this is the one I am. That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah. Can you merge all of these and kind of say, read this commandment the way it speaks to you? If you need to understand it logically and that's the way you'll believe it, do that. If you believe in a Mahapurusha and you don't want the depth that blows your mind, then just believe. And then, however, you're riding at the same end. It's different ways of getting there.
So if you take this Leida as just no, and don't take it in the way that we just had wanted to take it as to know, to be able to defend and so forth, then I think you can do that. I think you are able to do that. I think the argument can be made. Abarbanel will be horrified, but he's a different school. I think that's a possibility, yes.
Right, but it appeals to everyone, right? Because some people will need to come to belief by learning about it, and other people don't. I like that title, of person.
I think it can be said. No, it's not like Torah Codes.
Like, everyone has a different IEP now, right?
Torah Codes are their own topic. Okay. So we have only gone through like half of the material here. I know we started late, but it's 28. So no, what we still have to go through is the question of, so what is the Torah including in this mitzvah? What is it that I have to believe? What's here in this, I am God who took you out of Egypt? Now that we've decided that it can be a mitzvah, right? Not taking the Bahag view that it's simply introduction, but that it actually is a mitzvah. And taking the view that in some way belief can be a mitzvah, whether that means find your way towards belief or whether that means don't deny that which takes away from belief, you know, whichever approach you're going to take. What exactly is it that we are being expected to believe? And that's going to take us into the discussion of the Rambam's read, Ramban's read of the Pasuk, which is much broader, and then the question of bitachon, of trusting that everything is under God's control. Is that a part of this mitzvah of Anochi as well? Is trust in God part of belief in God? And then we have to get to the question of, does this mitzvah require certainty? So we have an awful lot to talk about, so I think what we're going to do is simply that part two is going to have to be next week.
Why is that? Are we not doing like Parsha next week?
So we're doing Parsha, but it's going to be Yisro. I'm sorry.
Are you going to be here next week?
Yeah.